Casper's Dogovins, Dogman. You're listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. How are you doing, Tim?
Not too bad.
Happy Easter.
Thank you very much. This podcast is interrupting a lot of quality baseball I was planning on watching today.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done one of these. Francois's not here, obviously. I guess, it's probably been about 4 weeks.
Yep, small talk, how you enjoying the playoffs, the headshots, etc.
Oh, it's been fantastic. I've enjoyed every second of it. I think the highlight thus far has been Colin Campbell's interview on TSN Radio.
Missed it. What happened?
He's just off his rocker. Very defensive. Lots of screaming, yelling. Yeah, it's entertaining radio, but...
Yeah, there's talk. He may be showing the door, right?
Well, that's embarrassing to see kind of like an NHL figurehead who holds like a pretty prestigious position within the organization. And he's just kind of, you know, he's turned out to be like just a joke.
Do you think Gary Bettman has a wheel of dismissal? Public... private, Twitter, email, face-to-face, my wife tells your wife, etc. No?
Yeah. Anyways.
So it's been nice. It's been a good opportunity to kind of clear our heads here after the Senators fizzle.
We've had like a couple weeks to kind of absorb everything that's happened in the past couple weeks. Like Brian Murray has received, a three-year extension?
Yep.
Corey Clouston has been dismissed. He won't have his contract retained.
Zach Smith had maybe the fight of the year against Nathan Horton in a losing effort.
I didn't get a chance to see that because I was at the airport. I guess the whole coaching staff was turfed, minus Rick Walmsley and Luke Richardson.
Yep.
Greg Carville's gone.
I never thought we would ever say those words.
Especially when we found out that Brian Murray was being retained. It was kind of like you figured it would be hand in hand that Carville would be retained. Person even suggested to us on Twitter that Carville could actually get the job because of his history with Brian Murray dating back to Anaheim.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a shame for me personally because I have a superhero party coming up in the next few weeks and I was planning on going as the unfireable man, Greg Carvel, but now I have to find the new uniform. So are you at all surprised about Walmsley sticking around? I mean, I thought he was brought in to be Pascal Leclerc's shrink.
Well, we've kind of had a reputation for holding on to like a previous goaltender's personal goaltending coach. Well into the time that they've left, like Ray Emery with Eli Wilson's another example, right? They held on to Eli Wilson for a year and then it didn't work out. But based off what every beat writer in the city was talking about throughout the course of the season, Rick Walmsley was kind of, they viewed him with high regard and he was even like one of the rumored candidates to replace Corey Clouston mid-season had Clouston been canned. So I'm not really surprised that he's stuck around. Ditto for Richardson. Obviously he had some extenuating circumstances happen to him during this past season, but I'm not surprised to see either of those guys stick around.
Yeah,
what about you?
I'm just kind of surprised. First of all, I tried to figure out who Craig Anderson's goalie coach was in Colorado, and by the looks of it, they just had a kind of a consultant or maybe even part-time at best goalie coach in Kirk McLean, who maybe had one of the most classic masks of all time with that plaid on the back. Beautiful. You don't see that anymore.
Do you think maybe that's one of the reasons why he had kind of a falling out in Colorado? He didn't have that buffer in between him and the coach, the head coach?
It's possible. It's kind of like the same situation you get with knuckleball pitchers, right? I mean, having their own personal catchers to make them feel good about themselves, their own personal relationship, someone who they can just work with while the rest of the team is doing their thing. So I'm not really sure. I think that Craig Anderson's issues in Colorado maybe went a little bit deeper than not having a goalie coach. He seems to be okay with the situation in Ottawa, and you'd have to imagine that when he was sitting down trying to hammer out his extension with Murray, if he had any problems at all with Walmsley or, you know, the structure of the coaching staff and how it was going to affect him, he would have addressed that, and Murray probably wouldn't have had any problem dismissing Walmsley, right?
No, I think it'd be reasonable to make the point that Craig Anderson is probably one of the reasons why Brian Murray still has a job at this point.
Oh, absolutely. That's, you know, that whole thing with, you know, we're going to talk about the Murray extension, might as well do it now. 3 years. Do you think he gets this without Anderson?
Well, we've talked a lot about that off air, and it's one of those things where at the time that the Anderson deal was made, Brian Murray came out and he said, well, we want to give Craig an opportunity to have like a window to see how he gets accustomed to the city, to the players, whether he's a right fit for this organization. And, you know, I think he played 9 games and played very well.
And also important to note, it gave us one of our first warm bodies back after the fire sale, right?
No, exactly.
Something tangible for the fans.
Yeah, exactly. And he played well. Aside from an injury, I don't think he had like a bad rough go at any point. I think he might have been pulled from like one game maybe.
Yeah.
And he never really faced the wrath of the media either. But he signed quickly, and I think it's completely plausible that he saved Brian Murray's job. And you look at the timing of the Anderson deal. The timing of the deal kind of strikes me as odd because, yes, it did give them a window of opportunity to sign him. But at the same time, it was a tank movement. Maybe they could have waited till July 1st. And considering what he signed for in the length of term, I don't want to be that revisionist dick who, you know, is saying, well, we could have held off to July 1st and waited. But I wonder if in the back of Brian Murray's mind, he was looking out for himself as well.
Oh, absolutely. And he's got to be concerned with season's tickets and everything else, too. The finances of the clubs. Certainly, the product that he puts on the ice is going to have a direct correlation with the income for the team. And if he doesn't make this move and give the fans something tangible to witness, and, you know, much like Obama, and I don't think any Canadian politicians are really selling hope these days, but, you know, he really gave us that, you know, identity that this team is going to be better in the future. We don't know what, like how much better it's going to be, what it's going to consist of, but we know Anderson's going to be here for a while, you know, so it gives the fans something that they can, you know, hang their hats on and say, okay, we've got this staple moving forward. Gives the journalists and every armchair jockey the chance to discuss whether picking sixth and having Anderson is better than picking where Colorado's picking, again, for the revisionists out there. So I don't know. I really don't know. I'm okay with the deal. What I'm most interested in with this entire deal, though, is I'm looking forward to Robin Lehner hunting Anderson. He's already started the bingo hunt. So I'm looking forward to more quotes about Anderson.
Yeah, I think Lehner has just as many professional wins in the last week than Ottawa does in terms of playoff experience in the last four seasons. So, yeah, it's he's off on the right foot.
Clutch playoff wins, too, all in OT.
Yeah, lots of goals in those series. Holy.
Yeah, no kidding. I like the, what's his name, Bud Holloway?
Bud Holloway.
Classic AHL name, eh?
Yeah, that's a good hockey name.
How is he the leading scorer on that team?
I don't know.
Unbelievable. Did you see, everyone's favorite prospect, Braden Schenn, was a minus five last night?
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's just great, eh? So how sad is it, though, as we talk about Braden Schenn, Bud Holloway, that we are talking about Braden Schenn, Bud Holloway, Corey Locke and Keller and our fantastic AHL All-Star, the clutch acquisition from Chicago.
Yeah, everyone's talking about Phil Tooney. Like, that was a fantastic throw-in. Yeah, ingenious. Just ingenious.
Brilliant. Well, I read an article that Tim Murray was, you know, very adamant that they receive him back in the deal, and he said Chicago was a little taken aback by this, but I guess if you want to develop a winning culture and you want to get these kids the experience, I don't think that the depth in bingo is, you know, quite there yet. They seem to have a lot of the, you know, the veteran AHLers who are more than capable of excelling in that league, like Keller and Locke, Benoit, Hale.
Francis Lessard.
Well, he's an NHLer now, right? Finished out the year, wasn't on clear day roster, so, you know, he's out of the discussion.
Well, maybe we're not giving Brian Murray enough credit for that philosophy of burying Lessard in the NHL.
It's
worked out so far. They've won one series.
It's been brilliant, and I think it's important that they kind of, you know, have these veteran guys who are capable in the lineup so that they can help, so these young kids like the Greenings, the Condras, the Butlers can kind of ride their coattails of experience through to the next round. I mean, we talk about these guys getting experience and how it's good for them to be in these pressure games, playing meaningful minutes and meaningful games. I guess as much under the microscope as you can get in Ottawa in April when the Sens aren't around. So it's good for them, and as the depth increases in bingo, we can see some of these, you know, career AHLers maybe, you know, go the wayside, go help other teams, take, you know, the very good money that they are making to be, you know, hired guns in the AHL.
I don't think I'd be anywhere near as happy if the team wasn't success, or if the team was successful if Robin Lehner wasn't playing in Nets.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you kind of feel a little bit hollow because, you know, like, you know, you want the team to win, but at the same time, you want your kids to develop, and you need Lehner to play some significant minutes in the AHL. And he'll probably have received that opportunity next season as well to be the starter down there. But it's good to see him get his feet wet, get his first two professional playoff wins, and hopefully that carries over.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He brings that kind of like confidence and swagger into camp next season and makes a go of it and keeps the hunt going.
You know, like having guys like Brust and excelling and being a cult hero is great. But I guess being in Ottawa during the Lynx years, we kind of had an idea.
Well, yeah, we've kind of seen like those cult iconic like AAA bums who've come through, like Gookie Dawkins. Andy Tracy was another hack.
Oh yeah,
We saw
hack of all hacks.
We saw Dave Hollins come through town.
I saw someone trying to argue with us on Twitter that Edwin Encarnacion was actually worse defensively than Tracy. How do you get away saying something like
that in a public forum?
Tao
Steve was saying that because I was making fun of Andy Tracy because we saw perhaps one of the worst Lynx games.
Oh, yeah.
One of the Lynx performances of all time from Andy Tracy. I think it was three Ks, two of the backwards variety, a grand into a double play, and a throwing error. It cost them the game.
That was a nuke of a performance.
But no, he brought up another name. I can't remember the guy's name. Someone Sasser.
Anyways, doesn't matter.
Anyways, yeah, it's irrelevant. But yeah, Binghamton, you know, the minor league hockey is not really that dissimilar. Like Denny Hamel is like another cult figure.
And again, like this is a development team for us. It's fine for the Bingo fans, and it's great for them to see their team having success. But, you know, as fans of the parent club, our interest in Bingo, you know, solely lies in the fact that they are responsible for developing the next wave of Ottawa Senators. And I want to see Robin Lehner on that wave hunting Barry Brust. Barry Brust was great to have around when, you know, Robin Lehner was up and down from the Senators and the World Juniors and whatever else. But ultimately, he's not part of the plan going forward. I'd rather see that team have success with Lehner. It would be a little bit empty otherwise, I think, don't you?
No, completely agree. And Tim Murray alluded to that as much. And in an interview, I think it was with Joy Lindsay from the Press Bulletin, he essentially said, you know, fans in Binghamton have to recognize that as important winning is at this level, player development comes first. And Robin Lehner is going to have that opportunity next year, and I wouldn't expect Barry Brust to be down in Binghamton.
Those articles have been fantastic, by the way, eh?
No, she's been very, very good.
Yeah, with Tim Murray, I mean, I don't, like, we never really seem to hear as much from Tim Murray in the Ottawa media. It's usually more about, you know, like, just a quick survey of what's going on in Bingo, but he seems to talk to Joy and the Bingo fans as equals and really spells it out for them as to what's going to happen, what they can forward to in the future. There's going to be a lot of good Sens prospects, probably suiting up there. He even referenced that Pettersson might be playing there next year as well. He also signed, right?
Well, I think Silverberg's another person who they're trying to persuade to come over.
And it's entirely fathomable to assume that Cowan may see some time down there this year. Rundblad may see some time. They've got nowhere else to go.
Maybe Francis Lessard will be retained.
Yeah, so it's one way or the other. Bingo fans can smile. We can all get along.
So while we're on the subject of goaltenders and we're talking about Robin Lehner, Curtis McElhinney's a UFA.
Yeah, okay.
And it's probably the only spot on the team that isn't guaranteed for next season. Like, a lot of the guys have their roles locked up. Ryan Shannon aside, I wouldn't expect the team to sign many of the unrestricted free agents who are at the pro level already.
Are you not going to pen Svatos in for a spot?
No.
No, okay. No. Wise.
But who would you like to see come in? Like, who would you envision coming in? We've seen some names kicked around already, whether it was, like, McElhinney returning, maybe Henrik Karlsson from Calgary coming in, Patrick Lalime.
Oh,
perhaps.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of bringing in a veteran goalie for the sake of bringing in a veteran backup goalie. I'd like to see, I don't have a name off the top of my head.
It doesn't pull at your heartstrings just a little bit to see like Patrick Lalime return?
No, it actually makes me want to vomit in my eyes to even imagine Lalime suiting up in a Sens jersey again. I'd just like to see a player who can come in and, you know, obviously they're going to come in as a backup, but I'd like to see them at least challenge Anderson while he's playing. You know, it's important to have that competitive atmosphere, something that maybe we haven't seen a lot from the goaltender position in Ottawa over the past few years. You know, winning you're in isn't exactly a great goaltending philosophy to have when you're bouncing back and forth between Elliot LeClair and Mike Brodeur, who, you know, the savior of the organization, Mike Brodeur. So I'd just like to see someone who ultimately is a competent goalie who will keep some amount of competitiveness on the bench, good teammate, and someone who will be a target for Robin Lehner to have to hunt as well, right? He's got to displace one other person now on the depth chart. So that's my only concern. That's my only desire for a goalie. I'm sure you've got some names, though. You always do.
Well.
Well, in that case, then.
Well, you know, guys.
That was a great impression of Francois.
Oh, we've kicked around some names off air. And the thing that I've always come back to, and it's kind of always been my approach whenever we talk like player activity, is to bring in like those maybe the cost efficient guys who have the upside that you can actually like parlay and move. And I think if you bring in like a guy like a Patrick Laliem or like an Alex Alder, any of those other like veteran guys who are just like kind of like year to year options, you're never going to be able to parlay those guys into like valuable assets down the road. You're not going to get a draft pick for any of those guys. But like maybe a young player who's coming off an injury, like a Josh Harding, could end up playing a handful of games. Like Craig Anderson's had a history of like knee problems and some groin problems.
Yeah, someone who's so, not a career backup or envisioning themselves as a career backup, someone with aspirations.
Someone who has a little bit more pedigree to their name. And maybe that's a guy who can step in if Anderson, knock on wood, he doesn't go down. But if he gets hurt, that's a guy who can step in and maybe play like, you know, 10, 15 games in a row and like provide decent results. We've already had an Alex Alder. We've already had a Patrick Laliem. We've seen how they've regressed and how they've played. And they haven't demonstrated any capacity to carry a team. So I'd like to see them go with someone who they can eventually like trade for a draft pick or two down the road, as opposed to a guy who will be here for a year and then he's at the door.
Yep.
And the only reason why I bring in a Patrick Laliem is so he can do more Gatineau car commercials. Aside from that, he's got nothing going for him, man.
I really don't like the idea of bringing guys who are tainted from playing in Buffalo recently. I don't like that. It just rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, so like whenever Francois brought up like Drew Stafford, you kind of like, you know, you haven't really said anything. You're just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, I die a little on the inside whenever it's mentioned. I mean, I'm willing to overlook it if it comes down to it, but ideally, you know, I'd stay away from Buffalo. I've got to ask you, but do you think there's anything more hysterical than the Leafs' fellatio of James Reimer as the savior in nets? You're shaking your head.
Everybody falls in love with like a young guy who comes up and performs well. It's like that whole Patrick Keefe phenomenon when he came up for like the second half of the season. He potted like almost 19, 20 goals, and everyone's just like, "Oh, this kid's gonna be fantastic for us." And well, we've all seen what happened to Patrick Keefe. But like, even people are still today are like bitter that we gave that guy up in the Carolina that deal with Carolina to bring in like Commodore and Stillman. It's like,
well, it doesn't help that Don Cherry keeps giving the guy airtime on Hockey Night in Canada. He had him on the other night, showing a good clip of Patrick Keefe. Remember when we sat next to that guy who knew?
He taught him music or something in Ottawa or something?
Yeah.
That was his backstory?
Yeah, his father. Anyways, you know, do you think a guy like Eaves is anywhere in the NHL without the bloodlines of his father being a successful NHLer?
Oh, we're really going off on tangents now.
Yeah, well, it's April. We just finished a 5-minute bit on bingo. Indulge me a little bit.
On whether Patrick Eaves.
Do you think he's an NHLer?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Like, he has some skills. For him, it's always been, you know, his health. He played a style that is, like, he's not a big guy. He's not an overly physical guy, but he plays a certain style and it makes him more susceptible to injury, and he's kind of had shoulder problems over the past couple of years. And
higher skilled Chris Kelly,
he's probably got a better release, but yeah,
well, most people do. I love that full cage he's rocking though now.
Oh yeah, he looks good.
Looks tough. Yeah, Boston tough.
Yeah, he made a nice pass from behind the net the other night,
really,
to win an OT for game 6.
Behind the net's an awesome place to be these days.
Yeah, it's the new place to be.
You know what's more infuriating than headshots in hockey? Listening to people talk about headshots in hockey.
The thing that's kind of funny about it is everybody has a position, and regardless of whatever position you take, whoever has the other opinion is dead wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, there's no middle ground. It's just like, it's such a polarizing topic these days.
Yeah, it's it bothers me for a lot of reasons. I'm not even going to bother with it because I just don't care.
Well, we've talked about it enough in the previous couple of episodes of our show. You want to switch gears a little bit?
Yeah, let's switch gears.
How about we talk about some of the house cleaning?
All right.
Okay, and we'll like go back to Brian Murray because we didn't really hit on this.
So no more Carvel, right? That's our cue.
No more Carvel. Okay. So getting back to management, the VP of communications, Phil Legault, was dismissed. As well as, I forget Chad Schella's role. I think he was like director of player services.
So what's that, like bank accounts and...
Not too sure.
Hotel rooms maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I kind of liken it to the George Costanza position he held with the Yankees.
But we've had a couple of like, questions from readers asking us, what do you guys make of like this whole house cleaning thing? What do you make of like all the coaching firings and what do you take of this front office shakeup, this managerial shakeup that we've seen over the past couple of weeks? So what are your thoughts?
Obviously, without being privy to the information about the ongoing work that happens within the Senators' front office, I couldn't really speculate too honestly. But if I had to fathom a guess, I think it just has to be part of the entire restructuring of the organization from the ground up. Roy McGregor's article, my favorite thing written about the Senators this season, and the plan, capitals. I think we're just seeing the plan just rolling out right now. There is going to be a corporate restructuring. It looks like that's already been done. Maybe, you know, even though the same positions will be inhabited by a new face, maybe there'll be new ideals that accompany it. If you're going to start with all these changes on the ice, might as well follow through with changes in the front office as well.
I was looking at the Senators extra poll that the Ottawa Citizen runs, and I think they were asking for Brian Murray's approval rate amongst the fan base. Like, how do you view his extension? It was pretty balanced. Like,
yeah, last I saw it was 53-47 last time.
Yeah, like it's very close. So do you kind of look at these moves and say, oh, well, maybe that's just window dressing because Brian Murray's been retained, and we've seen letters like Jeffrey Simpson's letter from the National Post.
Yep,
and obviously there's going to be a large sect of the populace and the fan base that aren't going to be entirely thrilled with what's happened this year and seeing Brian Murray get extended for 3 more years. So my question to you is, did they make these moves kind of for PR purposes, or is this, would that be privy to the knowledge? I guess you can't even really speculate, right?
Well, here's my question for you. Does anyone know these guys' names who are voting in these polls? You know, if they're not being, you know, relieved of their duties, so to speak, like, you know, to the common fan, these guys are just names. They're just, you know, they aren't people who matter to the average fan, right? Like, you get, you know, you ask 9 out of 10 people who call into the Team 1200, you know, who these guys are, and they'll just say, I don't know, like, you know, some farmhand from Las Vegas Thunder in the 90s. Like, I don't know, right? And it's true. It's true. And
you just dropped a sweet IHL reference. That's awesome.
They had unbelievable jerseys too.
Oh yeah, that was like Radek Bonks. Like,
yep, that's where he came over to play, right?
I know. Yep. And they, at the advice of his agent, he said, "You can pad your numbers in the, you can pad your numbers in the IHL, and you'll be highly regarded prospect."
Oh, the
but we've seen that happen. Like Samsonov was another guy, he just lights out in the IHL. Crazy. Anyways, yeah, keep going. We're going off on weird tangents as the show progresses.
I was watching the Habs game last night and watching Plekanec get into it, getting a little dust up with Marchand. All I could think of was Radek Bonk. Those two play a very similar style of game, eh?
Listening to the praise thrown to Sean Couturier, it actually kind of reminds me of like all the scouting reports that you hear on Bonk, right? Big guy, burls his way to the net to get his points, and he puts up some points, but
Bonk
he's defensively responsible.
Bonk had a way sweeter haircut and like the kind of thing he did himself to save money while he was earning IHL income and way better hockey name.
Yeah,
like,
very true.
Like, you very rarely do you get hockey players in the Senators system who sound like they could be from a video game.
True.
Yeah, actually, there was a Bonk's adventure, wasn't there?
There was.
TurboGrafx-16. There you have it.
Getting back to the Senators PR department.
Yeah, like, sorry.
I think we're kind of in agreement that maybe the Senators organization has kind of been... Would you say they're archaic in some of their...
There are certainly some things that maybe, you know, things that people... Like, I'm sure, you know, you talk to some of the Citizen guys or the Sun guys or, you know, whoever has to deal with, you know, with getting interviews from the Senators, right? And dealing with Phil Legault. We've dealt with Phil on just a very small handful
of
occasions.
Yeah, he was instrumental in getting Pierre Dorion on our show.
Yeah, which was, you know, turned out to be one of the best shows we've ever had, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of listenership. But, you know, he was fine, right? Absolutely no complaints with the way he dealt with us and the fact that he gave us an opportunity or whatever. But, you know, you look at, I don't know exactly what his job entails, but you look at some of the things that have been said over the past year, maybe some of the gaffes, I guess you could say, that have occurred.
You're just referring to Eugene Melnyk interviews.
Well, there's more than that, right? I mean, there was the whole expert thing that went on way, way longer than it should have, right? Like, that was a little bit, you know, anytime something like that ends up on YouTube and being a YouTube sensation, it's, you know, maybe a little bit embarrassing for the organization.
But he even pulled him out, like, after that was becoming volatile. He's like, all right, that's it, interview's done. And then, but yeah, like...
It went on for a while. I mean, that was a bit past it going volatile, right? Repeating yourself.
But, like...
Anyways.
We've talked about this, too, because we have our Twitter account, and none of the players are on Twitter. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, they've sort of embraced the social media aspect. Like, we've had Pierre Dorion and Cyril Leader have come on our show. I think Cyril Leader's been on some other podcasts and other shows. And, like, Melnyk gives his interviews to, like, the Toronto folk. But rarely do you hear him on, like, local radio before he goes on a Toronto show. Usually it comes afterwards. And He loves his Bob McCown.
Yep.
And none of the players are on Twitter.
Some of the prospects are. And they're, Spartacat and they're hilarious.
Is. Spartacat is.
Yep.
But that's, you know, that's it.
Louis's a great person to follow on Twitter.
Yeah, Louis Caparuso.
Derek Grant's good to follow on Twitter.
Yep.
Right? Like, these guys are, you know, interesting hockey folk.
Got to get Robin Lehner on there, though.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to
see
those.
That guy's meant for Twitter.
I'm sure that would cause. I'm sure people like Robin Lehner and even Craig Anderson, he's a appears to be a fantastic quote as well, or the reason that they don't allow the Senators on Twitter. But I'd like to see more accessibility from the players, especially when you're trying to reintroduce, like, you know, guys who are inevitably going to become community staples down the road. You know, what a great way to introduce them to your fan base and, like, the huge population of people who use Twitter these days, right? There's so many people who maybe aren't active on it but use it to follow it, like their own, UPI, old school newswire, right? And just their way to follow exactly what they want and who they want, and they're just observers, right? You don't know that they're there because they're not really active participants, but they constitute the hundreds and the thousands of silent followers that, you know, a lot of the, you know, the hockey community has to thank, right?
Well, it's a tool that can be used to just promote the Senators themselves. Like, look at the popularity of a guy like Paul Bissonnette.
Yeah, and I just finished telling you, I think he's going to get, like, he is going to be more likely to get a contract because of his, activities on Twitter and the high profile, nature of his tweets. He has made himself more attractive to a team, I think. No.
I don't know.
Small amount, but I think that that's something you have to consider, right? I mean, someone who's going to be good in the community, whether it's an online community or a physical community, is going to bring attention, positive attention, maybe a little bit of negative stuff, a little controversial, but entertaining nonetheless, right?
Well, I think that's the fine line, right? You have to say something worthwhile to, you know, get followed. And I just look at what, like, young Blue Jays players have done in Toronto, and they're all on it. It's almost like a clique of the young guys who are just, like, tweeting back and forth, just, like, inside jokes and stuff. But it's neat just to, like, kind of see the rapport that they have with certain players around the league. It's neat.
Yep, and you get to see guys like Logan Couture, who's always chatting with the Blue Jays, right? With the young guys, with Snyder and...
Like, Intersport cross-promotion. Yeah, ditto for... God, who is it? I don't think it's Cecil. It might be Ricky Romero might be tweeting at the guys from the Capitals.
Yep.
Like Eric Fehr and trying to think of the other one. John Carlson, actually, I think, was the other guy who's mentioned recently.
Yeah, so we definitely agree that the Senators, small things like that maybe make you wonder. We've had some interaction with Senators prospects and their organizations in the CHL, and even some discussion with European clubs, apart from some difficulties getting lost in translation. They've been very cordial and very aware that even doing something small with people like us who have a very limited following, it's still good. It's still good press for
them.
Don't sell
us short.
Oh, well, I'm modest.
Do you think it, like, hand in hand kind of goes with Ottawa being a one sport town, though?
Yep, definitely.
You can't really bite the hand that feeds, so they kind of protect everyone's own personal interests, as opposed to having to compete for, you know, that entertainment dollar with another professional sports organization in town.
Yeah, like, look at the great example, Yankees Mets, right? I mean, if you have someone down the street who's doing something better or more interesting than you, that's where the people are going to go. That's where the attention's going to be. That's who's going to be grabbing the front page headlines. There's a reason that the Mets spend so ridiculously in the offseason is so that they can try and steal some of those headlines from the Yankees. They don't do it as well as the Yankees, obviously, but they still do it to compete. There's a reason for it. And, I mean, the 67s aren't really much competition worth hunting for these days.
Well, that's the thing, is that's your hockey market, right? You're competing against two junior clubs.
Yeah, they can basically do what they want. They can dictate it, right, without having anyone force their hand, apart from...
Looking back at what's been said over the past couple of weeks, like, we've kind of analyzed some of the messages that have been put out there by ownership and management. And you can't help but notice some of the mixed messages that we've seen. And do you think that has some kind of carryover into this PR communication thing, or is that... Are we reading too much into that?
Oh, yeah. Like, one thing that, I don't want to say bothered me, but one thing that immediately came to my mind when I heard Phil Legault was gone was the inability for the Senators from the get-go, from the beginning of the fire sale, to identify this and to, you know, call it what it was, which was a rebuilding process. Call it whatever you want. The semantics don't matter. Just, it's the idea behind it. And when we had Cyril Leader on, one of the first things I said to him was, you know, I phrased a question that had the word rebuild in it a couple of times, and he was very quick to point out that this was not, in fact, a rebuild. And
you know, said we've never come out and said this is a rebuild.
Yeah, and flash forward a few months, and Brian Murray's called it a rebuild. Eugene Melnick's called it a rebuild. You know, using these exact same terms, and it just makes you wonder how focused, how focused the message is amongst all these different levels up top. And it makes you wonder how difficult it is for a guy, maybe a smaller fish in the senator's pool, to control that and to handle it.
I'm kind of surprised that there isn't like that mandate, that sit-down interview that says, all right, everybody get on the same page for like at least that PR kind of segment where it's like, if we're in interviews, let's at least be cohesive. As we've seen on our podcast and as we put up on the blog using James Gordon's transcript from Senator Zaxtra, there's a mixed message in relation to what's being said by Melnick and then what's being said by the other people in the organization.
And even there's conflict between what Melnick's saying one day and what he's saying on the next, right?
Well, when he's taking his foot out of his mouth one second, he's putting the other one back in.
Yeah, like look at the Mike Fisher stuff. He's telling us that he doesn't have a hand at all in the hockey operations. Next thing you know, Brian Murray's calling him for approval, or you know, calling him and being told to ship him to Nashville because he's his good friend, and you know, they could have had a better deal, but they didn't. Right?
Because you know, your best interests go towards Mike Fisher as opposed to your fan base and the fans who pay for the tickets.
Like it can't be.
Who cares about the rebuild? You gotta appease your friends.
Yeah, like it's so complicated. How you know it's so schizophrenic almost in a respect.
Well,
right?
To be fair, he was on the defensive, right, in regards to another question, and then he's like, "Oh no, I'm good to my players. Whenever I refer to the bad guys, I'm never referring to the players. I'm talking about management, other people who've been kicked out the door, and
how uncomfortable.
Yeah, look at how good I am with Mike Fisher. Like I treated this guy so well, and the fan base is left to say, all right. What the fuck?
Yeah, like how uncomfortable.
Sierra Leader was on our show and explicitly said the Mike Fisher trade was the best deal that we could get. Anything else is pure speculation. And You have the clip. Cue it.
We did. I think we did the best. You have to take into consideration every factor. No two trades are alike. So anybody that's saying there was a better deal out there doesn't really... is just speculating, to be honest.
And there you have it, right? Right there. I don't even know.
You make these funny faces and looking at me like, yeah.
Well,
it's just, you kind of wish that these guys could just get on the same page and like sell us on what's happening in the future, because like as much as they've cleaned house over the past couple of weeks, whether it's the coaching staff, the PR department, the communications department, if management, which I realize, like if you're a general manager, the decisions that you make aren't going to be foolproof and infallible. But if you get to that top level and you're still making the same mistakes, if you're not learning from your mistakes, man, what good are you?
It just boggles my mind. Look at, any one of the, the big political parties in Canada. And as we all saw on, or those of you who watched on the debate, it's very clear that these parties, each and every one of them, have a mandate and they follow through on it. And they ensure that their message is clear and consistent time after time after time. Otherwise, it sets you up for, attack and criticism from the other parties for reneging on what you've said. And, we are an unpolitical podcast, but any one of these five people can do it, then certainly the senators are capable of handling it as well, right? I mean, you only have to handle a small staff toting a message. There's only so many people who, have voices that matter in the organization compared to all the, hundreds of candidates across the country, advisors, supporters, everything, right? It shouldn't be that hard to focus a message, right?
But I think most of the problems from this stem towards what Eugene Melnick has come out and said. Like, granted, like a lot of people listen to his comments and like not take him with a grain of salt, right? Like they'll say, "Oh, he's just the owner. It's just lip service. He's always trying to promote." There's a light at the end of the tunnel. That kind of like mentality. Whereas a guy like Cyril Leader will come out and give you like the politically correct answer. Like, as fans, I don't think we're asking for a ton of transparency into what's going on. But as long as the message is the same, like there is no movement or grounds to like criticize, right?
Yeah, I'm not even looking for honesty. to be frank, I'm not even looking for honesty from the organization. I just want to hear one thing, and so that way it's easier to dissect for us, right? And it's so hard to dissect all the millions of different voices and opinions and, you know, structural, you know, very fundamental structural organizational stuff here as far as who's calling the shots. You know, it really makes you wonder. That's all. And maybe
I just want to know why no one called Melnick on the bullshit. When he said we could have got a better deal for Fisher, why didn't someone challenge him on that?
Well, I think Friedman maybe would have during that Hockey Night in Canada interview, which maybe was the most uncomfortable 2 minutes of my life. Just sitting there and just the amount of, you know, secondhand embarrassment that was flowing through my body for what he was going through on national television.
Well, Melnick goes through more tangents than we do.
Oh, horrible. How did he get on about his suit and PK ruining his suit and how he was a great guy?
He's good with the players.
Have you seen that suit? It's not even that nice. It's not.
Corey Clouston begs to differ.
Oh, yeah. Corey Clouston's going to have all of his suits up on eBay soon.
Corey Clouston would be interesting to talk to. Whether it's like in the coming weeks or like next season, just to like kind of go back and especially in light of like the Craig Anderson thing, right? Like if you want to make the argument that Craig Anderson was Brian Murray's golden goose that kind of like, hey, look at what good Brian Murray's done. He's brought in this goaltender and the prospects seem to be playing well. And it's just kind of weird because Corey Clouston wasn't afforded that opportunity to carry on with the personnel that Brian Murray brought in post-deadline when the team was having success. It's kind of like a chicken and the egg argument. Is it the personnel that Brian Murray called up from Binghamton? Or is it Corey Clouston's message is finally getting through to these players who are playing, you know, for a roster spot next season?
And the one thing that's so consistently overlooked here is that these impact guys, or not, you know, impact guys, but some of the guys who came up and at least made a difference, Condra, Greening, they're Muckler leftovers. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Late round gems. I mean, say what you will about Muckler's draft.
Well, they're like third line guys. Yeah. They're not, I'm not holding my breath for like a ton of production next season from these guys. I don't expect any of them to be like 20 goal guys. Maybe say Butler if he's playing on the first line, but
well, as
completely
we keep,
agree with you.
Like, as we keep speculating that the NHL is going to go to three scoring lines and then like a fourth kind of, you know, gritty, you know, somewhat grittier, you know, checking line, maybe a little bit more defensively aware. Guys like Greening and Condra are going to find themselves, you know, with lots of opportunity to contribute on the second or third lines. You know, wherever they fall, they fall. They're certainly old enough now that there's no, you know, absolutely no secrets, no surprises about what they're going to be. And if we can pen them in for third line minutes, then all the better. I just love the fact that they're not, you know, they really engage the play. You know, they don't just, you know, muck around the perimeter and, you know, dilly-daddle this, that, and the other. Like, they're not fancy hockey players. They're just, you know,
drive to the net, get your garbage goals, and yeah, completely agree with you. It's a change of pace from what we've grown accustomed to in the fat, like, what, 15 years that we've watched the Senators play?
Yep, like, you
especially
know,
in the playoffs. It's just how agonizing has it been to watch those teams in the playoffs just, you know, be content to sit around on the perimeter and just roll over.
And it kills them every time, and that's why we haven't really been successful in the playoffs. Like, even against the Ducks, it couldn't have been any more, you know, glaringly obvious how different the two teams were built.
Well, they were unwilling to pay the price to go to the net and get your garbage goals.
And Danny Heatley could not have been more scared of Chris Pronger. What a loser, eh? I still can't, like, in the right now in the playoffs, he's just garbage. I love watching the Sharks play. Just because he's such a terrible hockey player these days. And I just want to know what's going on in his head.
Yeah.
I really want to know.
Will he ask for a trade after this season? He's probably bitter that he's not overseas in Slovakia padding his international hockey numbers.
Yeah, I'm always torn about how far I want the Sharks to go. Like, what round do they have to lose in to be considered, like, real chokers and for there to be a lot of finger-pointing? You know, I think this year I'd like to see them go out in the second round to, you know, maybe an unworthy opponent. I think the Canucks will be tag chokers if they lose in the first round, especially. That'll be just be the best, right?
Yeah.
But I'd like to see the Sharks maybe build up the hopes of their fan base a little bit, dropping the big egg. I just want to watch them suffer.
You have to like make sure that Doug Wilson stays on as GM too, right? Like, he can't be a quick turf because you kind of want all those guys to like stay together and like be caught in that like perpetual state of, hey, no, we're really good.
And someone's got to keep giving those 67th jobs, eh?
Oh, absolutely.
How much did you love that CBC, who was that guy who did the CSS?
Well, Don Brennan's probably bitter that he isn't a San Jose beat writer.
Yeah, but then he would have to stay up, or he'd have to, you know, watch those Bruins games 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Could cut into some other things, right?
That's true too.
Who was that guy who did that mock draft on CBC? He was one of the head scouts for the
Mark
Spiedel,
I believe.
Yeah,
Spiedel.
I love the logic at the end there when he has the San Jose pick and they pick Shane Prince just because.
Yeah, Brian Kilray and Doug Wilson are tight.
Doug Wilson has no brain of his own. He's just a drone to Brian Kilray and his player development.
Well, that's true.
They have a ton of 67s players, former 67 players on their roster.
Yep.
Some pan, some don't.
67's really choked this year too, eh?
Yeah, they didn't play particularly well. They had some injuries, though.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah.
Anyways, so we've done talking about Lessard, backups, player changes. We had that great little clip. We never have little clips where we make people go back on their word.
No. Especially stuff about like girls being easy in high school.
Yeah. Well, we lost that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Which is unfortunate.
Someone owes us a big favor for that one. Oh, geez. Kurt Kleidendorst is now being championed by Stan Fischler to maybe be the next Sens head coach based on the amazing comeback the B-Sens accomplished over Manchester last night. That's scary. Hopefully one playoff series does not dictate.
Stan Fischler also said this was the season that the New York Rangers would win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, okay. Next. So one of the things I love is reading about the city of Winnipeg, and Brizgalov has just been incredible when discussing the city of Winnipeg and how I'd rather play in the KHL and how at least he can get Russian salami.
Did you hear the latest, though?
What?
The mayor of Winnipeg offered to fly Brizgalov to Winnipeg on the city of Winnipeg's dime to check it out. To make sure it was suitable for him to live in.
He's a UFA. There's no way he's going there.
See, even on a free trip to Winnipeg?
If you want a free trip to Winnipeg, would you go?
No. Not at all.
There's absolutely no reason to go. It's not even an international flight. You're not even going to get drinks on the plane. And that would be the best part, I think. Like, what are you going to go do? Like, go, stand beside the Burton Cummings Theater?
See, if I'm Brizgalov, I'd say, all right, well, I'm going to go fly to, like, Australia or someplace in the Pacific Rim. And then say, yeah, if you want me, I'll be over there. So come get me. Make the flight make it as expensive as possible.
Like, what's up with this new image that Winnipeg's flashing? Eh? Like this, we're gonna get an NHL team. You know, we're gonna fly people in just to check it out to see how cool it is. Like, come see the new Winnipeg.
But that's the best joke, right? It's out of the whole situation is that the only city who really prospers out of this is Edmonton, because finally there is a city worse than Edmonton in the NHL.
That's very true. I don't know, though. I don't know. Edmonton's been long established as the worst city to play in the NHL. At least people can maybe go to Winnipeg and find out for themselves, how bad it is to play there. But one thing that I'm, really excited about is how all these people are going to want to fly the coop and not go to Winnipeg. Right off the bat, our favorite, the Sixth Sense favorite, Kyle Turris. What's it going to take to get that done? I mean,
Oh, he's our FA, too.
There's a guy that we have to target. I am very adamant that this team should not be going out and spending any money on a ridiculous UFA. If we happen to make a savvy trade for one player, that's fine. But the fan base cannot expect one player to make the difference and to turn this into a competitive and contending team. I think a lot of fans get too caught up in the appearance of a team on paper versus what they're actually capable of and the nature of this.
Eugene Melnick.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to get that in there.
And the nature of this quote-unquote dispel any myths rebuild, and how long it's going to take. It's not going to be expedited by grabbing, a Scotty Upshaw. Like, what a waste of money, right? Like, unbelievable. Like, that's not even a lateral move. But anyways.
It's an expensive one.
Yeah, exactly. Back to Kyle Turris. It's just the kind of guy maybe Phoenix or Winnipeg seems to enjoy not giving ice time to young players. We had a quick look at their roster, and it was really interesting to see that basically their entire roster is either comprised of players with 10-plus years of experience. I believe there were, three guys who had 9 years, kind of on the threshold. And then the rest of the team was under 5 years of experience. And, and again, a couple guys, I think, 5-6. But it's interesting because, you're going to get a lot of productivity. I'd love to see the curve of productivity in NHL based on age. But a lot of guys aren't going to be crazy successes in their first 5 years, and obviously 10 plus years, you're kind of looking almost at twilight for most players. Maybe that's why they're not successful, but maybe they'd be interested in a guy like Peter Regan or Nick Foligno.
They might be looking for some warm bodies next year. I'm looking at their roster right now, Tim, and they have five or six forwards under contract for next season.
Well, you know what?
Maybe, and then looking at their goaltending, none, and then five defensemen are signed next year.
Well, it's a shame we don't have more Russians, because I don't think the Russians would mind going to Winnipeg to play there, right? At least they're going to be acclimatized to it. Small, angry
KHL
fan
West.
Base.
No, this is pitiful, though. Like, their best players are up for free agency. Shane Doan notwithstanding. It's a weak free agent market, too, so who are they going to bring in to, like, to go there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be difficult. They're going to need...
The RFAs have some bargaining position as well, because they can just say, hey, we don't want to play in Winnipeg.
Like, there's
trade our rights.
There's a team that needs to, you know, get as many draft picks as possible so that they can actually control these players for a number of years before they leave, right? It's unfortunate that Winnipeg is going to have to play games on the road, because then their players are going to understand that there's better places to play in the league. As terrible as it sounds.
No, it's completely realistic and it's honest.
Yeah. All these people looking at Edmonton thinking that they're the team of the future, this, you know, this dynasty.
Well, that's a team that has to win within the first, 6 years of controllable contracts, or else, sorry guys.
Not going to happen.
Wow. That's the problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, Chicago is in a, you know, very envious position, having, you know, a young team where people want to go play.
And they'll re-up on the cheat. They'll give you that hometown discount to remain there.
Vancouver, same thing, right? Like, look what the Sedins did and all those guys.
Look at Ottawa, right? Because Danny Healy re-ups, cost them market value, but he was unhappy within the first year of his contract. He was gone.
Yep.
So even if you're winning, like, nothing's guaranteed, right?
In Ottawa.
I think that's the sad truth about playing on a Canadian franchise. And frankly, if Vancouver implodes, it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out as well.
Same with Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's going to be interesting to see what the Ghost does to that team if they implode. Bodies everywhere.
Yeah. But looking at Phoenix's roster, so you like Turris?
Of course.
Is there anyone else who strikes your fancy? There's not much there, though.
Nope, that's about it, isn't it? Unless you've got a hankering. I don't know.
Unless you want Ekman Larson.
Is Roosevelt UFA this year?
Nope.
He's making a pretty penny, too, eh?
$5 million?
Yeah, I'm amazed at how cheap, I don't think they have a single player over $5 million, do they?
On Phoenix?
Yeah, I think Shane Doan is...
Only 4.5.
Yeah.
Chris Gallov might be making... Nope, 4.2. Oh, Jovanovski's making 6.5.
Yeah, it's really sad, almost, that people rip Bettman so much for, you know, moving the team to Phoenix and then having them inevitably fail, and we'll soon see them go back. But... The Coyotes management didn't really give that team a fighting chance. You got to put a quality product on the ice sooner or later. And that team's always been garbage, right? Like, they're just, like, they're trash. And no one's going to go support trash anywhere unless it's Toronto. And that's a very unique marketplace. And even now, we're, you know, even beginning of this year, we were seeing a little bit of challenging from the fans.
They lost, what, like 1,000 fans on average? Like, last year's attendance was, you know,
yeah,
probably close to like 19,000 people.
So even then, there's starting to be some fallout from, you know, consistently poor play. But at least they have James Reimer to sell hope next year. And they're not giving up a lottery
because
pick.
Because Toronto needs hope. Hey, they have a draft pick coming back their way next year, too.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them. That's a good start. And by then, by the time that draft pick's ready to play, Phil Kessel will be gone.
We're cynical buggers, eh?
Kadri Wolf played himself out of favor. All right.
Is there anything else that you want to hit on before we go?
I think one last thing I'd like to hit on. We got some questions here on Twitter. Some of them I think we already addressed. Some of them I don't think need to be addressed. But I'd like to address the one from Don.
Don in Oakville.
Yeah.
Awesome. Loyal Twitter follower.
Absolutely. Upside for Jim O'Brien. Let's talk about this. This is a good one.
Upside for Jim O'Brien?
Yeah. Don doesn't think he skates very well. He doesn't think he can make the jump.
I think the upside potential for Jim O'Brien is that there's still time to cut his hair. I think that's the extent of it.
I think the upside for Jim O'Brien is that there will be power skating in Ottawa again this summer. Mark Stone may want to take advantage of that as well. But Jim O'Brien could benefit from some power skating.
But that's the thing with O'Brien, right? Because listening to, I think it was Dorian or Tim Murray earlier in the year, who was praising the work that he did in the offseason, pertaining to his
both.
Skating and conditioning and strength training as well. And I think with O'Brien, most of his weaknesses pertain to his physical conditioning and just that kind of talent. It doesn't really pertain to his hockey sense or any of those intangibles.
We've addressed this before, too, and he's an interesting guy because his development path has always seen him struggle. For the first season, and then he finds a way to adjust to the new caliber of play and eventually excel. I mean, he was a first-round pick for a reason. I mean, we can knock him for being a bust all we want, but he was picked, what, 28th overall?
Yeah, we could attribute it to John Mockler's staff, too, though.
Yeah,
but... Like, there's more to it than that. Like,
but ultimately, there were a few scouts sitting around that table who agreed that he was the guy to take.
And everybody at that kind of like late part of the first round has question marks associated with their name.
Yeah, and, so, the Thunderbirds were high on him, too. It's not like the Thunderbirds were sitting around saying, like, we didn't think this guy had a hope in heck of being a, you know, an NHLer one day. You know, we kind of penciled him in to be serving popcorn next year.
But when we had Russ Farwell on, even his old junior general manager on their podcast, he was saying that part of the problem with him is that he came from, I forget what school he went to, but he didn't play a lot in his first year of school. So he kind of lost a year of development there as well. So... Maybe he's just starting to catch up and acclimatize himself, and he's a little bit, it'll take him a little bit longer to get developed than maybe we had originally anticipated.
So I'm thinking the upside for Jim O'Brien is probably going to be, you know.
I'd say third liner.
Yeah.
Possibly. He's a third or fourth line center.
I was going to say.
Or a winger, maybe.
Like a gritty checker, you know, someone like Bruce Gardner, but with staying power, I think. I'm kind of hesitant to combine the offspring of a Chris Kelly and Nick Foligno. Like, not good hands, you know, not going to finish a lot, you know, 5 to 10 goals, scrap when needs be, lay some hits, you know, second penalty kill kind of guy, and maybe even a body in the press box come playoff time. But I think that's Jim O'Brien's upside. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the team needs pluggers too.
No, I think if you get a guy who can play on the professional roster that late in the first round, it's just, you know, he's just depth, right? Essentially.
It's gravy. And if he keeps progressing, next year should be interesting to monitor how he does. It'll be interesting to see where he lands. He was already playing first-line minutes in Bingo for a lot of the year. The organization certainly liked enough to call him up several times, right? Over some other players who maybe didn't get as many cups of coffee as they would have liked, Dogman and stuff.
Corey Locke.
Yep. Oh, jeez. How about that Dogman celebration when he punted the stick into the crowd?
Fantastic.
What would happen if you did that in the NHL?
He's a class act. I love it. We've got to get the Dogman back on the podcast if he continues to play well.
Did you see the post-game interview with him? He's a big guy, eh? Like, his neck is the size of my waist. Unbelievable.
But you have an eating disorder.
That's true, I do. Watching the Sens for this long will give you one. Jeez. So there you go, Don. There's our upside for Jim O'Brien. A haircut in the third line and maybe the press box. So we got some good stuff coming up in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it should be exciting. Next week, we're hoping to get back in studios for kind of like a draft precursor podcast. I'm working on...
We'll have some people on who are going to be more versed in the draft. People have seen more, you know, junior games than we have.
Yeah, we have two irons in the fire. So if either or pans out, one's looking... like it's a sure thing, and then the other we're still waiting to hear back. So it's I'm tepidly optimistic with how good next week's podcast could be.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a staple for Sens fans to educate themselves on the draft this year by listening to next week's podcast.
Sweet. All right, you want to get out of here?
Yeah, let's go.
Perfect. All right, thanks for listening to the show, guys. We'll catch you next week.